Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
And we're joined today by Martin Puchner, who is out with a brand new book, The Written World, The Power of Stories to Shape People, History, Civilization. It's available from Random House, wherever your fine books are sold. Martin is a professor at Harvard University. And Martin, jumping right into this, I think as I've gone through literature over the years and thought about it, I really think of it as just something that moves me. Your premise of your book is how literature actually shapes the world. Can you kind of sum it up for us, how this whole idea of the written word can shape the world?
Yeah, you know, I think we all, when we hear the word literature, we tend to think of the kind of fiction bookshelves in a bookstore, and yes, that might contain literature that moves us and has made an impression on us. But I found that we needed to expand this idea of literature to include all important written stories. That's, for me, the key term. And once you expand it that way, you get much more than just fiction. You get important religious stories, sacred stories. You get political stories, like, let's say, the Declaration of Independence. You get important foundational epics that shaped culture since the ancient world, and it was really that broader perspective that drove home to me how much literature in that broader sense, to include religious and political stories, has really shaped our world.
Is it possible to identify the particular writings that you're talking about without looking at them after several hundred years or centuries maybe after they were written? Can you tell in the time that these are important works?
You know, it's true. I think you're right that often a certain text becomes dominant over time because, you know, there are a lot of stories. A lot of stories get written down. Many disappear and some make it. So they accrue their power over time because they are retold, they're rewritten, especially in the ancient world when the replication of literature was very expensive. A lot of resources had to be expanded on them because there are very few scribes. The division of labor wasn't as developed, so there was a real hurdle for texts to be passed down to the next generation. So only certain texts made it, and I think certain texts became powerful because they told stories that helped their readers and listeners to understand their place in the world. They answered important questions such as why are we here. What is the purpose of our lives, and so on and so forth. And then these texts were repeated, they were adapted, they were retold in many ways, and so they over time, they developed their influence. There are a few exceptions. I talk about a few texts that had a much more immediate effect, but they are all from the last couple of hundred years in an era of mass production of literature. I talk about the Communist Manifesto that had an almost immediate effect on the world, in part, again, because it told a powerful story, but it was able to develop its force much more quickly. But often, for the most part, I think you're right, Brian, it takes some time.
And how much are we at the mercy of the people who actually write down these stories? And I just think in my own mind, I remember seeing one of the first folios of Shakespeare and learning that those were not written at the time Shakespeare was actually doing it. They were recreated after he was dead. And so even though as I grew up studying Shakespeare in my literature classes, we would quote verbatim to make sure that we got something right, that may or may not be what the author wanted. So how much does the scribe or the person that's writing this down or the printing press or whatever, how much are we at their mercy when we look back at these scripts to try to figure out what the author was actually saying?
Yeah, you know, that's a great anecdote about Shakespeare, and it drives home a point that I make and that became very important for me, namely that our modern conception of an author, of a literary author who is a professional writer, who makes a living by writing, who comes up with original stories, who owns the copyrights to these original stories, this is all part of what modern authorship is. This is a relatively recent development. For the longest time, the way literature was produced was a much more complicated process where certain scribes, as you mentioned, would write down written oral stories that had been maybe told for centuries or even longer. They were edited. New scribes would add to those. Or audience members, as in the case of Shakespeare, would write down stories or prompt books that actors had used would start to circulate. So it was a much more dynamic and complicated process. We may feel uncomfortable because we can't pin down a single author who intended to write a certain thing. That's a modern idea, but once we get comfortable with this much messier process, I think we can also appreciate it as a very dynamic and interesting one.
I also found it interesting in your book that when you talk about, you know, Socrates, Jesus Christ, Confucius, Buddha, these folks, these were teachers, and they all came about even though they weren't writing anything. We don't have writings from actually any of these people. So how did these figures emerge as these great teachers, people we still talk about today, without having written down a single thing?
Yeah, that pattern became really fascinating to me, and it's not dissimilar from the Shakespeare example you mentioned, in that these charismatic teachers, they lived in literate culture, so they could have written, but they chose not to, and that seems so interesting to me. Part of the story I tell is a story of technologies, different writing technologies such as paper, parchment, the alphabet, and of course print, changing and charging the literary world with new power. But I also include stories like these where people were actually skeptical of this technology, and I think we are living through a time of technological change, and we may feel some misgivings about that. And so these ancient teachers, I think, were part of that pattern, an earlier version of a kind of skepticism about writing itself, in that they insisted to teach their students and followers face-to-face, and they didn't write a single word. But then, once they die, their students did. So again, we have texts, very powerful texts, that are now the origin of world religions and important philosophical traditions, that weren't written by modern authors, but that were written down by students and followers in the name of their dead teachers.
My guest is Martin Puchner about his book, The Written World, The Power of Stories to Shape People, History, Civilization. It's available from Random House, wherever your fine books are sold. Martin, as you took us through this journey in the book, Derek Walcott emerges as a character that I enjoyed out of the book. I mean, he's actually a person. It's not like it's a made-up character. But it seems like he emerged as really one of the Mount Rushmore type of a people that you encountered in this book. Why?
Well, in part because I'm sitting in my study writing this 4,000-year-long history of literature and writing, and I felt like I needed to write about some contemporary figures, and I also felt like I needed to get out of my armchair and travel the world. Here I was writing about the shaping power of literature on the world, and I felt like, okay, I need to go and visit it. And so I looked for contemporary authors to visit, and Derek Walcott emerged as one of them. Living in St. Lucia in the Caribbean, he had written these texts that really were in this intense dialogue with ancient texts, such as Homer's epics, but also this unusual figure, because there was very little literary tradition in the Caribbean, and Derek Walcott basically wrote the small island of St. Lucia into world literature, and of course all the way to the Nobel Prize, so it seemed like a really fascinating example, and he was very kind to meet with me, and I spent time with him. He's of course recently died. This was a few years ago, and it was a great encounter, and it was fascinating also to see, not just to meet him, but also to see how admired he was on the small island, how he really became this important cultural figure for modern St. Lucia.
It seems like any book nowadays you can get in an EPUB format for any one of your readers. How is this going to change the face of literature going forward? Because 500 years from now, we'll be able to see your book, The Written World, I won't, but the people that follow us will. We'll be able to see it exactly as you wrote it. So how does that change the view on authors going forward in literature?
Yeah, this extraordinary moment we are going through, this change in the way texts are preserved and distributed and read, is really, in a way, that my point of departure. I wanted to look at the prehistory of that at earlier versions of when new writing technologies came along and changed to get a little bit of a sense of what's going on around us. And I would say the changes will be profound. I really think that we are living through an extraordinary moment. There are more texts being produced and written and read than ever before. It's really this, after the print revolution 500 years ago, it's the second great explosion of literature. And what happened at these earlier moments were really two things. On the one hand, what you described, namely that a lot of canonical literature, I'm not including my book here, a lot of canonical literature is often an early adapter of these new technologies. The first printed book in Asia was a Buddhist sutra. When Gutenberg reinvented print in Northern Europe, the first thing he printed was the Latin Bible. So often these canonical texts are in our best position to profit from these technologies. And I think the same thing is happening now. All this wonderful world literature is available for free on the Internet. At the same time, new technologies lower the cost of literature, and that means more people enter the written world, more stories get told and read. And so that popular explosion of popular literature, I think, is happening right now as well. And it can be overwhelming, but I think in the long term, I'm telling a story of increasing democratization of literature, of more and more people entering what used to be a very rarefied world. And so I, for one, I'm really excited and curious about this explosion of popular writing, and I think that we are just seeing the beginning of it.
Setting aside your research, your professorship, and all of that, they're right into the book. When you look at these texts, especially the ancient ones, would any of them capture your mind or your pique your interest just as pure entertainment if it were not for the historical value of knowing how important they were at their time?
Yeah, I think they all do in different ways. Now, it sometimes helps to understand the context, of course, in which they were written, because text, there is a lot of unstated information, cultural knowledge that goes into them that's helpful to know. But at the same time, coming back to an earlier topic, these are great stories that made it in literature, so to speak, that survived where many others disappeared. So they do contain these great, often great set pieces, great scenes, important characters that are compelling. And it's one of the fascinating things in writing a 4,000-year-long history of literature that these characters really can speak to us today. It's this really uncanny ability of literature to speak across time. And I think these authors or scribes that produced these texts managed to tap into something that spoke to their contemporary audience, but that also speaks to us today.
Well, we've only scratched the surface of this fantastic piece that you've put out, The Written World, The Power of Stories to Shape People, History, Civilizations, by Martin Puchner. The book is available now from Random House, wherever your fine books are sold. And Martin, just a fantastic, informative piece here, just a great book you've written, and thanks for sharing it, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.